Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What up?
Howdy.
Howdy.
Water, my voice is breaking.
I tried so hard to get a sound clip of that, but the audio quality is just so shitty in that video that while we can make it out, like trying to get a good working audio clip of it, it just sounds terrible.
Yeah.
I tried.
I hear you there.
Background noise is a
thanks for trying. Yeah.
Thank you.
It is 10 o'clock on the dot. Purnell's late.
Purnell, how could you? My God.
Yeah, until 10:01.
True.
Hockey's not here either.
I know.
Yikes.
I see Purnell jumping on.
Okay, all right.
So he should be in here. There's
Hockey. Oh, it's Purnell. What up?
Perfect. I actually almost. Yep. I was like, wait a minute. Look at the time. I got to get moving. And then I moved.
You like to move it, move it.
No, I don't know. I don't like to move it. Move it. That's the last thing we're talking about. I don't like to move it, nor do I enjoy moving it.
They don't like to move it.
I don't like to move it, nor do I like to move it. Move it. That's an established fact point here. I do neither of those things. So I am just making do because that's what the world commands. The world commands that I move it, and then I move it, move it. And then I what? I move it! Like, wow. I go up the stairs.
Man.
You're like, what?
That's like a perfect lead into the first game we could talk about.
Yeah, we're going to have a very moving themed show. I'm also going to make it extra weird, so it should be a good time.
You want to make extra weird? You can make it weird and moving it, and then moving it again.
We'll see. You're going to have to let me know. We're going to have to DM each other after the show or during the show or whatever. Be like, what up with that review?
Weirdness approved.
Yes.
Get the stamp.
How was everyone's day? Speaking of weirdness, anybody have a weird day? I know Aki and Chris are not feeling well.
We bought a robo vacuum today.
Whoa. Is that like a Roomba? What is that?
Like just some generic. It was like $100 at a Liquidator outlet.
Roombas are so cute.
It was normally like $300, and we're like, we can't pass this up, can we? No,
we can't. Kind of like run on like a pre-established pattern, or is it just like roll around until it bumps into something and then turns?
I think it just rolls around until it bumps into shit and then changes course.
How often do you have to empty it?
Oh, we just got it today.
Oh, no, I mean, like, I figured by instructions it probably says something like empty it every, I don't know, two laps or something.
I just hope it actually has a vacuum on it and isn't one of those fake ones that's just battery operated.
We emptied it once already. It went
nice.
A couple of laps around the house and we had to give it an emptying, but no cat hijackers yet. Waiting on that.
Purpose, like you clean up crap from the floor. God damn it.
I feel like we're wasting all this in pre-show. We should start the show.
Because you haven't learned your lesson. Somehow you haven't learned your lesson. Always be recording.
I mean, it is recording, but I didn't do an intro.
Oh.
You don't need an intro. It's pre-show, baby. Just put it in the show.
Cold open.
That's right.
If only someone wasn't on speakerphone.
It doesn't matter. People will just, that's part of the cold open. That's why people get drunk before the show, and when they say action, they'll sober up very fast.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Can y'all believe we're almost at 900?
That's crazy, dude.
You record two per week, and you've been doing it for a very long time.
How are we going to party it up for 900?
Thank you so much for the sub.
Yo, thank you.
We need an air horn or something. What do we have here? There
nice.
We go.
That is not
a wonderful.
It's a fail horn. A very different type of horn. My day has not been weird. I fell asleep on the couch when I got home from the gym this morning. So I got home at like 1:30 in the morning, fell asleep.
Wait, does Joe need to do an intro? Hold on. This is good shit.
I've given up that like we're not okay, doing okay. an intro.
Sorry, Fidel. Sorry to interrupt. I just didn't want to switch off your phone. Story.
I'm determined to never let him get an actual intro in ever again.
If we're continuing on this path, Purnell needs to turn off the speakerphone. We need to hunker down and do this.
Let's get down to business.
Nobody's hunking. I don't have the moment of muscles for hunking. I'm working on that.
Hey, I could hear you better now.
I see you killing it in the gym every day.
Yeah, I just wish it would kill my body so I can get some fucking abs. But
you're over there doing burpees.
Yeah, burpees, the ones that aren't fun.
I hate them.
And then they're like, do a burpee, and then do 10 cross mountain climbers, and then do a burpee, and then do 10 cross mountain climbers. Oh, and then do a burpee, and then 10 cross mountain climbers, and then throw a 50-punch combo, and then do it all over again, and just don't stop until you die. It's great.
All these fancy, like, not evocative names for workouts nowadays. It's like, why back in my day it was push-up and sit-up and tossing a tire around a yard.
Well, they still do that, too. They still do that, but the burpee has just become the exercise synonymous with self-torment.
Where did it get that name? Like, who named it the burpee?
It's named after a guy, right?
Is it?
It's either that or it's named after the fact that you'll start burping after Todd you start making burpee. The air pass through your body. His name was actually Todd Burpee?
I don't fucking know.
God damn it, bro.
Let me see. Even better. It was a psychologist named Royal H. Burpee.
Decreed by the Royal Burpee.
Okay, so yeah, the original usage was the burpee test, in which a series of burpees are executed in rapid succession designed to measure agility and coordination. That's right, I remember this picture of this guy. He's like a really jacked, like, sailor-looking guy. But yeah, you know, that's, I knew there was something to it, that I had read. Yeah, 1930s is how old it is, so I guess it's not so newfangled.
God damn kids,
it's been around for a while.
Newfangled.
Newfangled
is so good.
I do like fangled news.
This just in, a newspaper spinning towards the screen. Royal H. Burpee III is his name. Wait a minute.
Well, that's crazy because I know a Royal Sefton III. He did our show for quite a while.
Wait a minute.
Your name is Royal. You ain't dropping that shit.
No, I'm sorry. That the third is somebody who I think is currently living who was talking about his grandfather. Okay. Never mind.
Okay.
Spin that newspaper back the other way.
Yeah.
Wow. Play the Batman. Play that Batman theme like backwards. Yeah.
Also
that'll work. That'll work.
Mercy.
Fucking yeah.
It's okay. The important part is damn.
I see you ate one before. Thank you so much for the sub. Casey, thank you for being here hanging out. 4 months. I can't believe I've known you for 4 months. It seems like it's only been like two. That is crazy. Time flies when we don't do shit.
I mean, through anything, life feels like it's moving too goddamn fast. I have so much I want to do, and I have no goddamn time to do any of it. It sucks.
Speaking of doing things, you were up here in the past.
Oh, that's right.
The past week.
I was. I drove a lot. It was fun.
Tell us about your travels.
Oh, the cops hate me, but also don't fear me? I don't know how to describe that. Because I got pulled over and didn't get a ticket, but I was harassed like what tends to happen when you get pulled over. I drove through a lot of small towns. I like driving through small towns when I don't get pulled over. I hung out in the mountains and sank into a swamp. Ruined my sneakers. They still smell like swamp crap. dodged a bear.
What?
Fucking yeah! Saw a lot of newts. It's been a fun time. Fell into a river. It's been a good time. That was a good trip up there. I was up there on a mini vacation that a friend invited me on due to like this crap that I'm dealing with currently. He's like, you know what would be nice? We all take a vacation, and you don't have to pay one red cent. I was like, that's great, because I'm poor. So they invited me up. It was a lot of fun. I went home. I want to go back to the mountains, because the mountains are great.
You know what else is
humans
great?
Humans are far away.
Root beer subbing for the 44th month.
Root is beer.
Ridiculous. We just call the show Root Beer, the SNL yeah. Root Beer case.
So
the honorary placard in the corner
that's
of every
amazing.
That
eye
is
catch for
three
every episode.
Subs so far this episode. How many more can we get?
16-inch subs?
Yes. Oh, man, now I'm getting hungry.
There it is.
Anyone eat anything good this past week?
Did I eat say anything good?
It's hard to say.
I had Wendy's.
Wendy's is good.
That's like a special treat for us anymore.
That's cool.
Wendy's is good, but I mean, I feel like Wendy's is a special treat for everybody because you can't find a damn Wendy's anywhere.
I haven't seen one in a while. Wendy's. Whoa, you're missing out. That Baconator is pretty good.
Are they still selling those?
Yo, those are so good.
Wendy's is bacon, the best of the burgers.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I'm allergic to pork.
I think you've mentioned that before. I just didn't remember. But I'm not sure.
I love bacon, but I am so allergic to it.
So what happens when you eat it? Do you just like get sick or you get high?
I have
breathing
asthma
issues. Oh, okay. So it's not the fun kind of get sick.
Yeah, no.
It's the dangerous kind.
Yeah, it's so totally worth it for bacon, but I don't do it very often. I eat bacon like maybe twice a year and that's it. And I fucking love it each time, but then I have coughing fits and trouble breathing for like 30 minutes.
I wouldn't know anything about coughing fits. Brooke, what about you? Coughing fits? Anything?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Every day, if I can. You see me muted, that's probably what I'm doing.
Oh, man. I could do it before the show and after the show, but I can't do it during the show.
Well, you can.
I prefer when my coffee fits.
I'll allow it.
It doesn't fit.
I don't think Twitch would allow it.
Okay, I love that.
You to have a coffee
I think
fit?
Twitch does allow it, actually. I think you just have to make sure that you have it in your content warning.
I think it has to be like legal in your state, though, and it's only medicinal in our state. So,
yeah. So you're not allowed to be sick.
Oh,
and doing it
that's what we're talking about. I thought we were just talking about.
I thought we were talking about coughing at first. I was really confused.
No.
Well, I mean, and you know, in my case, that would be just coughing because I have a slight bit of a cold. So,
what's the story there? Give us the details, Chris.
Yeah, Chris.
Well, I played a show recently, and there's a lot of people there, and even though I wore a mask, I probably ended up getting a cold. Maybe through Chatrin.
Have you tested? Is it anything bad?
No, because it hasn't. It doesn't. The symptoms are wrong. You know, like I'm not having any breathing troubles at all.
That's good.
And like I'm generally very tired, so it's like the tiredness is not worse than usual. And I mean, you can hear. I can speak just fine. It's just like you know.
That's a step up.
Yeah,
from
I don't
Jacob.
Know. It doesn't. Yeah, I mean, I will if it persists for a little while. I will get tested. But I mean, right now it's like I'm not going anywhere, doing anything. So I might as well just whatever.
That's fair.
I mean, to be fair with Jacob, he doesn't speak great because he's stupid. There's a difference.
Mm-mm.
By the way, based on our chat in the scheduling and planning Discord, I did make a new shirt that just SML, we put the M in stupid.
Amazing.
That's a wrestling sign that I saw maybe 20 years ago. And it has been
burned. Why was there a M in the wrestling
sign? I don't know.
Just somebody doing a cool sign, probably.
Some dude at wrestling had a sign that said, we put the M in stupid. And it has been seared into my brain. And now I put it on a shirt.
You got to capitalize on that stuff.
Yeah. So, exclamation merch, if you want to buy any of our dumb shit, please don't. Don't waste your money. But, you know, if you want to, and you're really, really drunk or something, and feeling frisky, I don't know. Do what you want to do. There's a cool
salesmanship.
Thank you, Aki.
Yep. Aki, just buy it.
Now she linked it. She posted the link in chat.
It went a cotton picking minute.
I have to come up with thousands of dollars to fix for home repairs that I need immediately. I am not sure.
What are you going to do about
that? I'm dealing with that. Yeah.
I'm going to be stuck not buying any for years at this rate, which is
why
extremely
is
upsetting.
I'm so sorry.
Because I have to pay $1,000 to fix my roof. It's going to be a little more than $1,000. We also need to add vents up there, finally. And then I have to pay about 7,500-ish for new air AC unit and furnace. Then I have to spend a little around 1,000 to get a permanent crown for a cracked tooth that needs a root canal. I have to spend around 3,000 to fix my front and back porch that are falling apart.
A part of me is like questioning how the time frame that this all happened in, but then I realize, yeah, fate can be a real bitch. It wouldn't surprise me if it was all in like a month's time. Yeah. But obviously, it all builds up over time, but you discovered it all as a mandatory need all within.
Oh, no, I've known about the porches for a while now. That's what I was going to be saving up my money next year to fix them. The roof, the AC, and the furnace all happened. And my crown all happened within two. It's fun.
Oh, I believe it. Damn, I'm living some of that life here, too. And I'm fighting the deluge that drags you down with it. Because I'm like, nope, I have to be positive. And in the midst of all of that, I'm also like, if I can just find my niche and get a new job. So, like, it's like, yeah. It's like, You're trying to outrun your bills, which is funny because that's pretty much what we're all doing. But I feel like hopefully you can find some reprieve in there or some relief.
Well, I'm contacting companies and programs and stuff to see if there's any money that any of them will give me to help me fund this. I called a whole bunch of them today, this morning, which is why I didn't sleep at all, because I was waiting for them to call me back. And guess how many called me back? Fucking none of them! In hopes to get some funds. And so I'm hoping at least one or two of them will call me back and be like, hey, yeah, we can give you, you know, $1,000 or something to cut out some of that cost.
A couple state programs.
I would, but they're so hard to fucking find because states don't make any of this bullshit easy.
Can't deny they're that.
Like, they're I'm like, oh it. Yeah, hey, you're on Social Security, you're disabled, you're on food stamps, you're on Medicaid. We're not gonna tell you where any of this shit is. And if you call us, we're gonna be like, I don't know, try this person, I guess. Fuck you, people. Just get a list of the shit for us. Because we fucking need it. You can go up there, you can find all sorts of shit for fucking rich assholes to not have to pay anything. I can find a ton of that. It's like, you fuckers. I have like four or five different groups that I'm calling. I've called almost all of them. Tomorrow I'm calling another one. And hopefully I'll get something at some point. Hopefully that'll help me pay for it. The roof is, I'm just going to have to eat that. Thankfully, I only have to pay a deductible.
The roof?
Yep.
You going to use barbecue sauce?
Nope. Just eating straight up Tar-Yo. So thankfully it's just a deductible.
Barbecue sauce all over my titties.
Gross.
I understand where the rent come from. God damn it, Jacob. You gotta build that up. You gotta be the guys like, you know, we had Jacob all wrong. Look at this debonair gent coming in here saying, hey, Aki, I know you treat me like shit half the time, but I want to wish you well. He goes, barbecue sauce titties. God damn it, Jake.
That was a sound clip.
I'm rooting for you, man. You do this to me.
The roof's going to cost me a bit under $2,000 on its own. I have a $1,000 deductible, and then it's going to cost money to get the vents put in so my roof doesn't, you know, break apart quickly. Because everyone, you need your roofs vented if you don't have insulation. And I'm just saying, got to do it, folks.
These are facts. I don't fuck around with the roof. That was one of the major fears about buying the house. It's like, hey, if you buy a house, I mean, now I'm responsible for the roof instead of my apartment complex. And Dad was like, well, you just got to build up the money. Know that the damage is coming. And about 10 years after you move in, put that money away. And I'm like, even knowing that. Putting aside a random $10,000-$15,000, obviously it varies by roof, you might be able to get it cheaper.
What you do is you wait until a really bad storm comes by when your roof's a bit on the older end and it destroys the fucking thing. And then you put
your
a claim
shingles?
In. Oh yeah, most of my shingles are gone at this point because we've had a whole bunch of storms since like March. So like it got so bad, which is why it's getting replaced. It got so bad I could see the fucking gaps in the shingles, and I'm fucking blind. And I was like, oh, oh, I should probably call somebody about that. That's not good.
Oh, mercy.
So, yeah, they sent somebody by and they were like, oh, yeah, no, that's not good. And the company's like, yeah, no, we're just going to replace the entire roof. I'm like, oh, thank God. Because I did not care. Have the, like, $12K it was going to cost otherwise.
Well, yeah, just got to hang in there. It has to get a little better because I'm rooting for it to get better. And if it doesn't, well, guess what? We can kick it in the nuts. But for now, let's just hope for the best.
Thankfully, worst comes to worst, I can borrow money from my grandparents. So I can get it paid. I just really don't want to have to borrow it from anyone. I'd like to just try and get it taken care of and pay it off myself. But I can't get that kind of money. So worst comes to worst, I can get the money. It sucks because I don't want to have to borrow from my grandparents because they're old and they could use this for, you know, things that they need. So, but yeah, so I'm not too terribly, you know, worried. I just would prefer things to go my way for once. For once this month, it would be great.
Solidarity to that, my friend.
But enough of me being a downer. Brooke, how's your week? Please say it's not bad. Please.
It's pretty good. I mean, it's just getting started, honestly. Last weekend was chill for me. Just played a little games. Played Moving Out with You yesterday. I'm just babbling. I wasn't expecting to talk, so I'm just kind of filibustering over here.
Yeah, if we're
going to talk Moving Out, should we just dive into these things?
We can dive in. We can take as many chat breaks as you want, because this review is going to be all over the place. Heads up.
Works for me. First game to talk about tonight is Moving Out 2, developed by SMG Studio and DevM Games, published by Team 17, released August 15th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Moving Out is back and wackier than ever, and now with online play. Return to pack more and use your moving skills across brand new dimensions and some old favorites with a U. Help rebuild smooth moves and become an all-star furniture arrangement relocation technician or a fart. Yeah.
Or both.
It wasn't a good joke in game. It's not a good joke out of game, sadly.
It's kind
of
good.
And I like the
fart.
Interestingly enough, I mean, it's a strong acronym. Interestingly enough, that was totally different than the eShop intro. I've started putting like the store descriptions in my notes just to make sure I don't like repeat the notes too much at the beginning. That was completely different than the Switch eShop.
Yeah, I usually go with Steam for my intros.
That's cool. That was much better than the eShop one.
Concise and quick.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's jump in.
Who wants to talk?
I said I'll go first on this one. I'm just going to say it. I haven't played Moving Out 1. So this review is what it would be like if you went into this game without playing the game this is a sequel to, just like me, Brooke. And you, that's true. I'll also be comparing this game to Overcooked. I have played the Overcooked games briefly. I did not love them. I do love Played Up. But yeah, this game has a lot in common with Overcooked franchise, but it also has a whole lot not in common with Overcooked, even outside of the difference of cooking versus moving, much to my surprise and delight. I actually had some fun with this one. So what's the concept of this game? Well, it's a lot like this really stupid bit I used to do back in my early 20s with my friends Corey and Anya. We called it Bad Movers. I don't know if I ever did this for you, Chris. And we were just a bunch of like really bitter, grizzled old dudes who move furniture around and are really bad at it. They piss everybody off. They break everything. They hate their job. They cuss. They drink on the job. They smoke. Sometimes they even die in combat, which is just moving furniture. And they reminisce about how hard moving is, how many other boys were lost on the job, had to go back home telling families, hey, you know, I'm so sorry, Johnny didn't make it through that last move. And this is all pretend. Stay with me here. This is all a pretend segment we made. I've added all these notes since I posted in our afternoon group chat, by the way. This is all a pretend segment we made that would, in our imaginations, it would air on CBS Kids. So my character would be like, take a long drag of their cigarette, and he'd be like, last move I ever made was to move Johnny's dead body out of that burning building. And then he'd break down crying. But mostly he'd just roll in. My character would always roll in and be like, hey, I got all these armoires. And I still don't know what an armoire is, but yeah, we even had a commercial break, and they would be like, hey, don't move a muscle. Bad Movers will be right back on CBS Kids. So yeah, this is a comedic game, I feel, about how shitty movers are. So it just completely unlocked that memory for me. Thank you for letting me share that. Corey and Anya, our dream became real. There's now media marketed to kids about really horrible grown adults moving furniture, just messing everything up for everyone, especially themselves. But no, this isn't...
I was just going to say, I don't think that you've told me about Bad Movers specifically, but that absolutely tracks as a early 20s Brooke thing.
So. Oh, man. And that's one of the more family-friendly ones, so we won't spend too much time on that. 2009 to 2012 was not a good year for a lot of us humor-wise. But yeah, so this game isn't totally dark, and it is kid-appropriate, so that was not related to this. Unlike Bad Movers, the CBS kids show that thankfully never was, it's super upbeat. It's goofy, it's wacky, it's zany, an irreverent romp, I believe it would be called. This game feels like it was written by someone who has had all their stuff broken by Bad Movers over and over again, and they just have like a really great attitude about it. You get in this game, you go through the tutorial, it's teaching you how to move and what the rules are, and by the end of the tutorial, you are officially fart certified. FART certified. So that's the kind of humor this game is starting to bring in cold out the gate, and it's bringing a lot of it. Like, some people are going to wish this game had less jokes, because it's just like, it's like a lot. But I appreciate it. Like an Overcooked, when there's you're navigating... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
There's a pun at the... There's at least one pun at the start and usually at the end of every fucking level.
Oh, it's so true. And
I love them.
And I'm about to give a really bad pun in a couple minutes that's really going to piss Aki off, no. So get ready for that. Like an Overcooked, when you're navigating to different levels, you're driving through town. The animations for when you break shit or run over fences or trees, pretty funny. Sound effects are good. So it's got that Overcooked charm that I personally really love that made me want to like Overcooked too. Y'all know I like cooking games. Played Up, though I do love it, is missing the polish both visually and in sound design that these games offer. Played Up definitely doesn't have that aspect of their game on lockdown, even though I do prefer it to Overcooked. Overall, when you're driving through town in this game, feel free to run crap over. It's fine. You can break anything, even in town while driving. Go nuts. Treat it like a demolition derby if you're really pinned up because, and I quote, the whole town is insured after moving out one. When you're navigating from the Movers HQ, where the tutorial takes place, to your first house to move slash level to the next house, or maybe even later to the arcade for some mini games you can unlock by stealing. More on that in a bit. Let me talk just a little bit about the humor and co-op playability before I hand this over to Aki. Overcooked was a really silly game, lots of humor, but while it has a similar tone, I feel this game is much sillier and at times cruder, but not really like too crude, still kid-friendly. There's tons of pop culture references, so it's one of those games. And yeah, I find all the jokes and gameplay to be appropriate for kids, but also bring some... You know, not adult humor, but jokes that some adults will really appreciate that might go a little bit over the kids' heads, but still tons of stuff for them. So I think this will actually be a fantastic family co-op game. I have babysat a lot. It can be hard to find games that are okay for kids, that kids can actually even learn and get kind of good at, but that I won't get bored with or think that is like a waste of my time outside of humoring the kid in question. This would be great for that. I think even outside of that, it's just a really good, wait for it, couch co-op. A little moving joke for you there. Okay, Aki's going to kill me.
I'm debating.
Thank you. She's thinking about it. But yeah, thank you. That was for you. So yeah, I keep comparing this to Overcooked. Let's talk about the differences. For me, I really like both solo and multiplayer for this game. I don't find Overcooked to be playable single player at all. That's not just me. That's everybody. But this is absolutely playable solo. Overcooked, multiplayer, you know, while it's what it's for, kind of pisses me off. That's kind of what it's meant to do too, and Overcooked has a reputation for that. This game, I played this with Aki yesterday, and Joe, will you even believe me if I tell you I had a really relaxing time?
No.
Okay. That's
more because you're playing with me than anything, but
yeah,
it was cool. This game, y'all three will have to tell me if you agree, but it's a lot more of like, I want to say more physics-like management than storage management, and especially compared to the time management, more like resource slash crafting management game that Overcooked is. You're literally moving furniture and it feels like furniture. Your character's picking it up, you can pick it up from different angles. If you pick up a toaster, even like a little TV, cool, no big deal. If you pick up a sofa or an armoire, if I may, it feels really heavy, dude. I did I did test the multiplayer feature with Aki. Thank you, Joe. And we both got online and we were chatting with our headsets and we were both like, actually open it up, talking about how we really both prefer of us to solo games. So we're like, we're just going to try this out really quick. Neither of us do a lot of co-op or multiplayer gaming. Either of us is personal preference. We both said that. And then I actually stayed a little later and played extra than what I was planning. So that happened. I feel like this time can be a kind of a relaxing, almost time sink to do with someone. Sometimes you have to back out and pull the object out of the house, going back to the heaviness of the objects. Unlike in Overcooked, which only requires like any actual hand-eye coordination, like in a sporty way, in my opinion, in optional ways. Like in Overcooked, you can throw each other dishes and catch them in Overcooked, but you don't have to. You can always walk them over there and hand it to them. You probably need to throw in this game. You can also throw items into the truck. It's okay if you break windows. In fact, it's preferred. What is the worst part of moving, fitting the junk in the truck? You gotta Tetris it. Well, you don't really Tetris to a T where it's a tight fit, but you can't always throw everything in the truck all willy-nilly. You gotta make sure everything actually fits in the truck from the house, because you're only gonna get this one trip. Although, I learned when I co-opted with Aki, you can enable assist modes for playing this game. One of which is you can get the item. Okay, cool. Just like in real life, you can slap stuff. Almost done here. It makes furniture moving easier. Amazing. I love this mechanic. If you are moving a toilet, which a lot of people weirdly want moved in this game, they want their toilet in the new house, but they don't want their computer.
And they're all electronic.
Yeah. If you move a toilet and it's still plugged into the wall or the plumbing, you could pick it up, slowly pull it out of the room, and eventually the cord will break as you continue to pull it further and further from the outlet. That's the only way to get it out, or you could slap the item and the cord attached to it will break instantly. You also have to angle stuff. Are you moving a bed downstairs by yourself? That sounds horrible. Just like in real life, you can't pick it up lengthwise and fit it through the door. You got to think about how are you going to angle it? How wide are the stairs? Am I taking it downstairs? How many doors am I going to have to go through with this thing? And what's the angle on the door to the wall to get the couch out? Like, that's very real. You also need coordination because, yeah, you're going to have to throw some items. Really big items like beds you can't throw. There are going to be some big old wall windows. Earlier I mentioned you can break windows in this game and it's preferred. Your moving truck could be closer to the nearest window than it is the door. It can be easy to throw things out of the house into the truck instead of walking them through the door if you're really trying to get those pro times. And just like in Overcooked, you are timed in a way, more in a traditional way than Overcooked is. Instead of just getting in the weeds in a restaurant and pissing off all your customers and the level ends, and they're just staring at you and getting mad, there are no customers here. There's no one to watch as you break all their fragile items. No one to watch as you break all the windows open or slap stuff. You can slap doors until they break. Get them out of the way. Doors are annoying. Don't even get me started on sliding doors in this game.
Sliding doors.
They're so horrible. I actually thought we had enabled an accessibility feature that meant that I didn't have to open it over and over again. No, I was wrong, and we messed that level up, but it was all me.
First of all, wait a minute. So, because Joe said that too, and I'm sort of like the one guy is like, we're not too bad so much as just, you got to find a small box and just block that bastard. Like, you
That's
open
really
that thing
smart.
One time and block the door.
Why didn't I think of that? Dang it.
If it makes you feel any better, neither did Joe.
That's smart. This is why you're the strategy guy. But yeah, but luckily, no matter what you're doing, no one's watching you if you slap doors off the hinges, if you break windows, and no one's watching you if you steal. Final note, I know what you're thinking. Next, you'll say, Brooke, what if I see some cool designer clothes or trendy new clothes or costumes at someone's house when I'm moving? Can I steal those clothes from the people I'm moving their stuff in and use those items to decorate myself and my other teammates and hot exclusive new looks to increase our mover style? And the answer is yes. Yes, you can. This is how you unlock new styles for your movers. This game has a lot going on, more than I expected. But you don't have to take my word for it, because here's Aki.
All right. So yeah, me and Brooke clearly played this. I actually ended up having a surprisingly large amount of fun playing this, with and without Brooke, because I've played much further since when Brooke and I played.
Yeah, didn't you already 100% this?
No. I 100% did a couple areas, though.
That's still intense.
Yeah, and I'm totally not playing it right now. Totally not. No, I wouldn't do that.
Some of those side objectives can be tough.
Yeah, the problem is they don't tell you what you have to do.
Yeah, we couldn't figure out a couple of them. We were like, oh, now we've got it. And then it's like, no, you still didn't do that. And I was like, what does wash the flamingo mean or whatever?
I figured that out. I've finished the almost all
Dude,
of the
what was that?
Stuff. You have to put it into a tub, some or not a tub, in a shower area and actually turn on the shower.
Oh, we had it in the shower, but we didn't turn it on. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah. That's times. Exactly what we did. We
you
did
had to the give
oopsies.
The flamingo a literal shower.
Yep. But yeah, so there's optional objectives that you unlock after you beat the level for the first time. They aren't particularly hard usually. And there's an accessibility menu that you can toggle on. They do not affect achievements, which makes them fantastic.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can still get every achievement. Some of them are, they outright just make the game easier, which is always liked. One is they'll increase the amount of time you have to finish a level because there is a time limit on all the levels. There's both a standard time limit and a pro time limit. And
does it bump up the, I'm sorry, it just relates to that. Does it, when you do the time change, does it actually bump up the silver and gold and all that too, or is it just like a general... You have more time.
You just have more time. I don't know about silver or stuff because I don't know what you're talking about there.
Okay, go ahead. Keep going.
You can... Shit, now I don't know where I am.
Sorry.
You're at home.
It's sorry. All good.
Just shut up, Joe. It's not helpful, you bastard. So there's also the ability to make it to where you can pick up two-player objects, which you're only really going to find when you're playing in two-player, obviously. The game isn't that harsh on you. So, yeah, there's others, but I don't remember all of them because I'm lazy and memory is bad. And, yeah, they do not affect achievements, so you can go ahead and click all of them on if you so wish. So, matter of fact, one of them is that you don't actually have to put stuff into the truck and organize things. They just disappear, which is one of my favorite ones, because then you don't have to play Tetris with this shit later.
Yeah, that was cool.
So, yeah, it was,
that
was
my
really
favorite
fun.
Part, though. I would, like, me and Purnell would bring stuff to the truck, and he would drop it off, and I would, like, push things into the corner, like pick them up and throw them on top of each other. And
you would cool. like that, you weirdo.
Shut the fuck up.
Not wrong, motherfucker.
I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Surprise, motherfucker. It's the better one.
Surprise, motherfucker.
There we go. Yeah.
Surprise, bitch.
So yeah, it's really fun. You do unlock different things you can pick up in the level as stated, where you can, you know, get different looks and stuff for your character. Usually you pick up an object and it'll give you three of a similar head to equip to your character, basically. And you have a bunch of them. Like, there are some that are like dog heads, there's some lizard heads, things like that. It's just a whole bunch of weird shit. Some of them are just like living toasters.
Something Purnell and I really appreciated is that there's no specific handicapped character. Every character could be in a wheelchair.
Yep.
That's I really did like that.
Yeah, that was pretty nice.
So that's one plus yeah. more that has over Overcooked. There you bam.
This has everything over Overcooked because Overcooked's meant to piss you off. This isn't. Like, legitimately, that is what that game is built to
do. Actually,
it's built
it
specifically
game.
To make you angry.
Well, Purnell, tell us about your thoughts on the game, because you and I played it together when you dropped by. We put, like, I don't know, an hour or two into it, just going nuts.
Yeah, he puts around, like, four or five levels before I had to cut out. And I honestly did like it a lot. Like, I was fond of the original moving out, and though my memory is probably crappy, I'm sure if this is true or not, but one thing I didn't realize could be a thing, which is in this game, which I don't remember being in the first ones, you can move into houses too. I feel like the first one was all about moving stuff out of homes, but this was like, hey, here's a lever, you have to move stuff into the house. And when that happens, whereas with the truck you have to load it a la Tetris style, like we were all talking about, when you move stuff in, you have boxes of various shapes and sizes, And then when you pick the box up, you'll see silhouettes in the house that indicate where that object can go. So that was one of the levels where we had the sliding doors. It was like, okay, well, since that box needs to go back there, it would make sense to just make it block the door and make that be the last thing we move in. And then cool. we can just dump it and jump out the window. So it added some really cool puzzly elements at the first game. I'm sure the first game had elements like this, but in a different way, like doors that opened one way. So you had to make sure that you made sure you did, when you got inside the first time, you broke the window. So you didn't have to worry about going through that one door every time. Like it was a lot of fun. I like the idea that you can find those little video game cartridges hidden around the map, which will allow you to unlock little mini games at the headquarters. Joe mentioned earlier, I love the fact that everybody's in a wheelchair, so you're not like relegated to like having to play the wheelchair character if you want to have that representation as you play. Music's still good. Percy, I enjoy the puns and the humor. I had a couple like dumb grins every once in a while. I was like, oh my god, they actually said that shit. It was fantastic. I do like the element of them having fragile objects specifically because it's a bit of a dance with danger bit. So one of the things I try to get Joe to do, he was reluctant half the time, I'll admit. But I'm like, hey Joe, stand there. I'm gonna throw this across the water. You can catch it and then put it on the truck. And when you do that with fragile objects, you run the risk of the other person missing it, and then it breaks, and when that happens, it goes back, it respawns at the original point, so you lose time running back to get it. This game is a genuine good time.
Speaking of throwing shit, my favorite was when I threw something, it hit the umbrella, bounced off it, and bounced into the truck.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all made very specifically to try and angle things into the truck when you hit the umbrellas. It's pretty nice. There's actually a hidden one of the things you have to do is bounce stuff off of 8 of them in the first level where you can do it. So yeah, have fun. Go I get that remember, gold star.
I did feel like that's what I was referring to, by the way. You said the gold star. I was referring to like there being like a default scoring and there's like a better star, like two different star levels.
There's the normal and pro, and it increases if that's what you were trying.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to, but I just defaulted to silver and gold. But I also like that I'm sure later on they became rougher, but the time seemed fair. Like, I never really felt like, unlike an Overcooked, I never really felt like a lot of those levels were just ridiculously unfair, but that may also be because we were playing in co-op, and most of my unfair vibes came from the single player in Overcooked. But yeah,
this game isn't bad, even on playing it solo. Because I've played more than half the levels myself on solo.
Handle calculus and stuff.
When you play solo versus two player, you grab different things. They'll switch up different stuff that you have to grab in every level, so that you're not picking up any of the too heavy stuff. Also, some of the items in the levels just outright change. Like, in the very first level, if you're playing two-player, there's an L-shaped couch you have to get outside. If you're playing solo-player, it's not an L-shaped couch. It's just a standard, normal, straight couch that you can carry out on your own. So that's what they do with it.
And I will say one thing, that even though we've all been saying how fun the multiplayer is, I feel like one thing that we should mention just in a verbal sense is that one thing that makes the co-op particularly fun in this game that isn't stressful, but also is like more of the fun stress, is the idea that you have to verbally coordinate your actions. Like Aki mentioned the L-shaped couch, and you're like, all right, we're going to move this couch. And as Joe and I are moving, like, okay, I'm going to turn counterclockwise. He's like, your counterclockwise? There's no your counterclockwise. It's just counterclockwise.
That's awesome.
And you're like talking through all the stuff. And it's just that element of fun of talking your way through motions, making a plan and executing it. And if you see one person going, it's like, no, don't go over there. Go over here because I'm on my way there now. We can get the couch together. It's like, oh, cool, good idea. I'll go get the couch with you.
Interesting. Me and Brooke didn't really need to do that too much.
Yeah, we split up, and then Aki would talk to me when I was about to fuck up one of our achievements, which happened a lot. I'd be like, don't use that sliding door. I'd be like, oh, shit, I almost forgot. Brooke, don't break that window. You almost broke that window. We're trying to break. Oh, my bad.
And then she'd break the window anyways.
So it was an accident.
You did have your own version of it. Your communication was specifically achievement driven, though. That's all.
Yeah,
but we still had flirting. I did a lot of flirting too.
Shock. That is a shock. Absolutely.
I don't remember it.
Was it a job? Aki's flirting on the job within the job. Where the hell? Yep. Who the fuck?
And Brooke was being flirted with and didn't notice. This sounds about right.
So. Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, this game's clocking in at $30. We need to make a verdict on this one.
Yes. All the yes. This is a fantastic game. Fun for everybody. Go get it.
I think for what this is, it's a surprisingly fantastic game. It certainly exceeded my expectations. Sometimes I get something to buy and I'm like, everyone should buy this game. Shut up. You don't know what you like. And I don't know if like every person in the world will like this game, but I heartily believe that anyone who's thinking about buying it or likes games like this will be pleasantly surprised by this, both solo and multiplayer. I think the game just works.
Yeah.
Cool for
it's
now.
It's great fun.
Well, I mean, I only got to play a little bit of it, so I can't speak on the price itself, but I will say that in a general sense, I would buy this game. I think it's good. I bought the first one moving out, and this just feels like they improved it. So,
cool. So Pernell's going to buy it, and then all four of us are going to play together.
Yeah.
Sure, I can do that.
Hey, that
this is something
cool.
I will actually play with you fucking people, because I've really enjoyed this. I will actually play this with you.
Nice.
Especially if I get to play with
That's our real reason.
Wow.
Even anyway, though that's the real reason. Joe and I are ready to play. Brooke's like, oh, I'm sorry, I got an event to go to tonight. And Aki's like, oh, look at the time. I'm feeling kind of sick tonight. It's time to go.
I still need to play something with Joe and Pernell. I haven't played something with either of y'all.
By all technicality, the only person I've ever played anything with was Cole and Brooke. Those are the only two people I've played any games with on our team.
You've played with me.
Have I?
Yeah.
What did we play?
Zombie Army.
Oh, shit. I forgot That's all about that. I try to block that game out of my mind.
What? Oh, I didn't play the first one. I played the fourth one, but I thought that was pretty fun.
I reviewed all the DLC. It got very samey by the end.
Yeah.
So I kind of just like, I need to play the first one, though. I have the Army. Zombie Army Trilogy game. I need to play that at some point. But yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Next game to talk about is Hammerwatch 2, developed by Crackshell, published by Modus Games. Released August 15th on Steam for $24.99. Gather your heroes and journey beyond the dungeons of Castle Hammerwatch to explore a pixelated world like never before. Aid King Roland's resistance while helping villagers along the way. Battle beasts, finish off hordes of the undead, and face the forces of evil. Now, what's going on in Hammerwatch 2?
So, Hammerwatch 2 is a sequel to Hammerwatch 1. Shocker!
What?
Though you might be wondering about that, but the reason why I say that is because there was a game in the middle called Heroes of Hammerwatch, which was more of a action roguelike game, and this game is not a roguelike. You might look at it on the surface and go, wow, this game looks pretty damn primitive considering it's coming out in 2023, and I personally believe it to be intentional. So I'm not going to knock it for that in that sense because I actually like the graphics. It reminds me of a classic game I used to play back in the day called Dungeon Explorer, which was meant to be kind of like a Gauntlet meets RPG game. So I liken Another this to game. That as well, same as the first Hammerwatch almost immediately. So I'm cool with that aesthetic. But in the idea of this game, it takes place exactly after Hammerwatch 1 takes place. They give you a narrative. I didn't care about the narrative, in which you defeat one of the dragons that you were tasked with defeating in the first Hammerwatch game. The castle collapses, and you start out on the island that had the castle, and you're trying to get out of the dungeon there. And then one thing that ends up being pretty cool about this is you come to realize this game is, I guess you'd call it open world in this context, but you have a full-on map you're exploring. And you're interacting with people, you're going to locations that may have like people that sell items to you a la shop, people that will give you quests to engage or embark on, and all sorts of stuff. And there's even a day and night cycle. At the beginning of the game, though, before you engage in any of this, you have to choose between one of, I want to say it was four or five classes. I chose the paladin, and my friend that was playing with me chose the warlock. And we pretty much went along that methodology. Skills, you get four that you have key to buttons. Pretty much everybody has their little standard attack. That's one of them. And then you can have three other skills as well. You have them so that they're set up kind of like in four tiers. Like there's an adept level and like a basic level. And then there's like two levels beyond that. Early on, you only have the first level, which has the four skills you start out with. And as you gain stars, you can kind of upgrade those skills by way of increasing different parameters associated with them, like cooldowns or damage output or what have you, how much mana they use or how long their cooldowns are. And as you get higher ranks of those things, or higher ranks in general, you'll be able to not only learn new skills that you can equip instead, but the old skills will unlock new buffs that you can upgrade with your star points as well. So the old skills get a little bit of bark back into them as you progress further as well. I will say, however, I do wish that there was more variety in the skills the characters got, because even with new ones unlocking, I started finding myself thinking, you know, I'm just going to go with this damn hammer because it gets the job done. Why fix it if it ain't broke? Or the other thing, it just feels more like passive to me in a way that I don't want it to work for. I want to do something different with this guy. So with that said, it doesn't ruin the game because
the Dragon Explorer
was upgrading characters, but you only had the same two moves the whole freaking game, your basic attack and your crash. So whatever. Or sorry, your white magic and your black magic. But anyway, so you're walking around this island.
Horak Light coming in with a raid of 8 folks. Welcome in, everybody. We are talking about Hammer Watch 2 out on Steam right now. Purnell is chatting about that. Purnell, keep going. What were you saying?
What's the screen name? Is it Horror Acolyte? Because yes. That's really good. Love Horror that. Respect.
Acolyte.
Okay.
Well, now the pressure's on. So, watch.
This game,
that's a really good impression of me, Purnell. That was messed up. I don't sound like that, man.
No, you don't. Stop it. It never sounded like that. But no, like this game, it is an enjoyable game. I found myself being in a position where as I was talking to the NPCs and getting the quests, whether it's during the night or during the day, or buying items from characters, I never found myself particularly feeling jazzed about the world. Like, that's not a slight to the game, I guess, because I feel that way about... I was like that with Dungeon Explorer 2 for the most part. Well, Dungeon Explorer 1. Dungeon Explorer 2 was freaking awesome. But I was just in it for the gameplay. And my friend and I had a great time with the gameplay. There were, you know, big enemies you'd come across sometimes that would give us extra bits of problems, like the giant wolf in the cave that we didn't expect, and he got one hit killed, and I was like circle strafing, killing the whole wolf pack so I could resurrect him, because that's one thing you can do in this game. If you die, you can go to the to a friend's tombstone and resurrect them, and so you don't get killed as well. And it's free to do so if you can pull it off. And there's no timeline, there's no time limit, you're not getting counted down before they get burned out. However, if you both or all of you die, you can pay gold to respawn in different places. Like, the closer you are to the place you die, the more you have to spend to respawn there. But if you respawn wherever, all the enemies you killed before come back. So it's like, well, if you got to fight your way back down to the end of the dungeon, well, you're going to fight all the monsters on the way too. So you might want to spawn at the boss if you're not a cheapskate and you value your time instead. This product, as it were, was pretty engaging to us. It was fun to communicate. It was fun to kind of plan around and do dopey things. I like the fact that the game starts out small and that you're on this little island, but you eventually get access to leave the island and go to the mainland and engage in more quests and find more dungeons. And you can always unlock fast travel too eventually, which allows you to travel back and forth between places if you want to go back and finish old quests or what have you. There's various item crafting that takes place, but I will say the item crafting isn't particularly deep. It's just you go to different merchants, and as long as you have the tools to do so, you can just select the box and it says, here are all the things you have the ingredients to make. Do you want to do it? And you go, sure. And you spend it and you're covered. But nonetheless, it gives you a reason to go pick up 100 mushrooms and 30 amethysts so you can just have it on hand in case you need to spend it to upgrade, you know, unlock a potion or something. With that said, it does draw me to one of my major complaints for the game. Admittedly, it's early. They could fix this. But I will say this is something worth addressing, especially if it ends up going to console eventually. And that is the interface system could use some work. More than a few times, I found myself just kind of fumbling through some of the menus. For example, I guess, let me see if I can describe this properly. If I want to use an apple, not binding it to a hotkey, mind you, just going to the inventory and using an apple. I'm playing on the Steam Deck. I would press a button to, I could click across to an item, but I couldn't find any way to select what to do with it after pressing A, short of dragging the mouse cursor over and then clicking the mouse button down to activate the eat or drop action, despite the fact that hitting the button should trigger that sub menu to come up and I should be able to select it with the cursor, or not the cursor, but with the thumb pad. But apparently it doesn't work that way. If it can work that way and I'm just an inept goober, by all means, developers, please tell me, because I want to have a better time with my game. So I'm okay with eating that bullet. But, as it were, both myself and my co-player were kind of like being like, wow, it would be real nice if they cleaned this menu system up. Because most people, I feel like a lot of people are going to be playing with a controller. I don't see a lot of people keyboard and mousing this game. I'm not saying it's not possible, just this game sings to controller play. But well,
I know they are working on a console version to come out in the next couple of months, but yeah, I'm not sure what the keyboard and mouse to controller ratio is going to be on PC.
Well, with that, if that's the case, if in the event they listen to this review, please, if you hear this, when you're making your changes, make that one of the things where if you click using the cross pad to an item and you press the button on it, the sub menu becomes controlled with the cross pad and lets you cancel out of it. That just makes sense. And it would be easy for you to implement. I'd assume. I'm not a programmer. I'm just a data dork. But I think you could do it. So that is an aspect of it. And also, I mean, the binding of the keys, that is something I'm still getting used to as well, because I had a moment or two where I bound an apple to like the A button and accidentally ate 5 apples and I shit has. Like, whoopsie freaking doodle. So, but all that rambling aside, I do find the game to be fun. But I will leave with the caveat, though I kind of mentioned it earlier in the review. This game is not... Oh, sorry. There's one more negative thing that people might not like, but I got to point out, because it didn't bother me, but I'm not everybody. From what I could tell, I couldn't see a way to select multiplayer local. I only saw multiplayer accessible by joining or creating a server. So that may mean that couch co-op is out, at least right now. So take that as it will, as you will. But I played multiplayer online. Didn't bother me. My main player is always going to be online. Or we're going to have two Steam Decks next to each other, so whatever. But not everybody's going to have that situation, so worth pointing out. Now, back to the last point I was making, and then I'm done rambling until the next thing where I got to ramble. This game is not designed to be a new age gaming product. There are a lot of games of this ilk out there, some of which are higher end in the graphics or budget category, maybe. This game is not trying to be that from what I can tell, but I feel that what it is trying to do, it does well at doing it. So if you want some high end game that's going to push your graphics card, you want another Diablo or whatever, this ain't it, baby. Go buy a different game. If you want a game that has a retro vibe, that has a lot of cool lighting effects, and some pretty funny voice acting in regards to like the different characters you can choose the big to make and whatnot, with a limited but still interesting to use skill system, I believe this game is up your alley. I like Hammer Watch 1, I like Heroes of Hammer Watch, and I like Hammer Watch 2. Then again, I guess it shouldn't be a surprise if I like the other two that I would like this one. But I'm going to make it official. Ooh, so there you go.
Give me an official $24.99 verdict.
I think it's an official buy. This is a good game to play.
Cool beans. And for the next week, it is 10% off on Steam. So $22.49. So if you want to save a couple of pennies, there you go. Next up.
Buy from Wawa with that dough.
Oh, speaking of Wawa, did you hear what they're going to have supposedly next year? Rumors.
At Wawa?
Yeah.
No, I have not.
What's Wawa?
Peach Mountain Dew.
Specifically at Wawa's?
Yes. Peach Madness,
also,
allegedly.
Also, it's a convenience store with gas stations as well. That's all. It started
okay.
small like and then it became
or
massive.
And go, or I don't know what the hell else they have. In,
I've never heard of that one either.
Oh, well. Anyway, next game, Rainbow Skies, developed by SideQuest Studios, published by East Asia Soft, released August 11th on the Switch for $19.99. Embark on an unexpected journey and redeem yourself as a failed monster tamer in this strategy RPG. Chris, Rainbow Skies making the debut on the Switch, finally. How is it holding up?
Finally, right?
Well, it's been on PlayStation for a good while, so...
Yeah, it was on PlayStation 3, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. And Vita.
I mean, I'm reviewing it. Maybe I should know this. So it's the sequel to a game called Rainbow Moon, and I know that was on PS3. Let me see. Is there any Wikipedia on it? No? Okay, fine.
Rainbow Moon, yep.
You'll look it up yourselves. Either way, that is going to factor into the actual review, because it does have some a little bit of oldness to it. But yeah, let's talk about it. So, Rainbow Skies is a JRPG. Does not appear to have been developed in J, however. I do believe it's just kind of hearkening to that system of turn-based combat. So it's one of those things where you walk around and get into random battles and stuff, and some battles that are actually seen on the map. But the difference is that, like, in the actual battles, instead of just standing on two sides of a screen and you know, clicking attack on each other, you actually move around on a grid. So a game I, you know, Rhapsody on PS1 and more recently on Switch is a lot like that. It's like it's random battles where you're walking around a map and stuff, but then once you get into the battle, you're put onto a grid and you do tactic style combat with enemies. Some older games that utilize that system. One favorite of mine is called Emerald Dragon on the Super Nintendo. Well, Super Famicom. It never came over here, which is really, really too bad. But so it's, you know, it has precedent as far as the system goes. So yeah, it is a RPG that has, I'm going to call it, a humor flavored story. It's not like completely absurd or comedy like some RPGs that we have seen. You know, some of them just kind of get into real absurdities and then you know, just kind of plays around with the formula. This is very traditional JRPG, but it kind of makes fun of the characters. It makes fun of the situations somewhat. It's one of those things where it should be read like a joke, but you know, it's not overtly jokey, I guess, is what you could say. You know,
hey kids,
it's I'm suddenly reminded of the Super Nintendo game Dragon View, which actually opens in the opening story with a "Don't call me Shirley" joke.
Wow. So,
yeah, it's not that level, but it's close.
Oof, wow.
Yeah, that's a whole thing. I could talk about Dragon View all day, but I shouldn't. I should talk about, oh, thank you, somebody, a horror acolyte, loved Dragon View as a kid. Me too.
Oh, hell yeah.
I bought the limited run games release of it. It only took 3 years to get to me. Oh, anyway, I know.
Wow.
No, it was fast turnaround. It was close to 2 years. It was close to two. But back to Rainbow Skies. I'm hoisting myself on my own petard here.
That's
so
true.
Love that phrase.
I recently played through a Bomberman game, and I use that phrase so many times because that's the literal definition. It's blowing yourself up with your own gunpowder is the literal translation of that.
Ooh, I did not know that. Cool.
Anyway, yeah, it's Shakespearean. So Rainbow Skies, it's a little goofy, but not quite. It's got some RPG-ness to it, but you know, it's a lighthearted story about a failed monster hunter who is just an egomaniac, just a complete, almost reminds me of Fang in a Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, and more recently Fairy Fencer Refrain Melody. Or is it Refrain Chorus? Damn it, I can't even remember. I reviewed that game last month. Anyways, Refrain Chord, anyway. So yeah, he's kind of a dope. He's got a long-suffering sort of tutor who is also an archer who kind of helps him to undergo this test that goes wrong. Situations happen, and they quote-unquote fall to their death. Game over. So the game goes to black and tells you the end after they fall to their deaths. Obviously, the game is kidding, but that's the kind of humor that you see in this game, is that they're like, well, these characters are now dead. Let's go join another character. And so you join another character who is a mage. And she has, her name is Ashley, and she has some misadventures and ends up getting partnered up with these two boys. And due to circumstances, they now are forced to adventure together, no matter what they think about each other. So that kind of creates the internal conflict. And the external conflict is, of course, at least for the most part, is finding a way to fit, you know, put everything right, essentially. So that's how you get your party. It's, you know, swordsman, archer, and wizard. You know, what else? You know, is there a, you know, name a better trio, I guess. And yeah, so
wait,
like I
was
said,
it it's Fairy Fencer F, the refrain chord? Was it Fairy Fencer F?
Yeah, refrain chord, yeah.
Oh my god, okay, thank you, sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, if you really want a very, really funny visual novel JRPG, check out Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force. It's one of my favorite Switch games, even though it's a PS3 game. And, but yeah, speaking of which, so, like I said, you walk around slowly on an isometric map in, you know, field, and fill in a map, and you get, you know, bonuses for discovering everything. This game is rife with bonuses, percentages, skill trees, and like just and tutorials. I'm actually, you know, when I was played through the entire first chapter of the game, got well into the second chapter of the game, my tutorials percentage is not even at 20% yet. This is after hours of playing the game. So the game will stop you to do tutorials. It's not the worst. It can't possibly be worse than Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch. this is the review, by the way, where I talk about every video game I've ever played.
I can tell.
I'm so happy. This is so good.
Right. But
Ni No Kuni did go crazy with.
Okay, so I beat Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch, and this is not really spoilers for the story,
when the
but
credits
let me just
rolled,
tell
the
you.
Tutorial popped up. It's like credits are this part of a video game.
Oh my god, that's so like funny. That, yeah.
Tooltip that you have to click through to watch the credits.
Right.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, it eventually just becomes a parody of itself, and which is what this game is, actually, kind of. So, and you eventually do, speaking of collection and stats and stuff, you do get into monster collecting in this game as well. It's not a central focus, but that is a thing. It's not just your three characters through the whole game, but those are the three characters that are in the game. So like I said, you go through dungeons, towns, you know, and it's fairly simplistic in certain ways. Like, you just run into like a lady holding a giant syringe in order to heal your party. Usually you can get your HP healed for free and your MP healed for a small cost. Speaking of your MP, that is, that's one thing to like kind of, one thing that you'll kind of learn in this game is that everything levels up. So if you really want to keep up with the game, in terms of like, it's not a difficult game, at least you do have the option to raise the difficulty at a certain point. But you know, while it's not difficult, it is a game where, like, you level up something by using it. You level up armor by using it, weapons, your magic. So your magic actually gains levels as you use it. So it definitely behooves you to be spending those points as you get them, and different things like that. It's got weird systems, too. Like, for instance, you regularly pick up items that increase your inventory. And there are, let's see here, 10, yeah, I'm looking at 9 right now, but one of them has a question mark. So between 8 and 9, different inventories for different items, and each one has a set amount of slots that you can increase, through other items that you pick up. So, you know, just understand, this game can get into the weeds quite a lot. And speaking of getting into the weeds, you do have a, once you get out into the weeds, then you can fight monsters that are either on the map or as random encounters. Now, a cool thing I do like about this game is that you can sometimes, only for a few frames, like maybe a second or two, you can be warned that an enemy is coming, and if you push the button, then you can actually get the jump on them, which is kind of cool. Or, you know, if you ignore the prompt, then it's possible you could avoid the enemy altogether. It might not even come and attack you. But if you want to get at it and get the jump on it, that's pretty cool. I like some of these systems. Like I said, some of them do get bogged down. The thing to know about this game is it's not a fast game. So if you really want to enjoy this game, as I have, you really gotta, like, get used to the fact that you're gonna be visiting that menu often and basically, you know... You're going to be clicking on a lot of things as they level up and unlock. And, you know, when you go into any kind of collection of town, you know, any town or collection of people, there's almost always a big stack of side quests to do, which involve, like, get me two potions, get me, you know, this item that drops from this enemy, and, you know, you get rewards for them and stuff, but more importantly, you get that percentage point to go up, man.
Important percentage.
Yeah, exactly. The other interesting thing about this game, and I honestly don't think I've seen this in an RPG before. It's so small, but I just want to call attention to it. If you stand still for like half a minute, the game will automatically pause. I don't know why. It's not, you know, it's turn based, so there's not really anything they can do to you. But that's just interesting. I've never seen a game an RPG specifically auto pause before. So anyway, like I said, so the music's really nice in the game. The graphics are really interesting. It's a very, like I said, it's isometric, and we'll talk one more time about it being isometric in a second. But your characters have this kind of, it's kind of chibi, but also kind of realistic look. They kind of look like action figures in a sense. It's an interesting art style, and I couldn't quite place it, but I like the look, but it is very, like, looks like it was from, like, the PS3 era, in terms of, you know, just kind of looking a little bit more simple, but not, like, throwback, like, not, like, PS1 or Super Nintendo graphics kind of thing, like, games that I talk about frequently. Now, let's talk about a complaint. So the game has isometric movement, right? But on the field, the map field, you move in 8 directions. Mostly you're going to be moving diagonally, so, you know, you're going to be kind of, since you can move with the stick, that's not a problem. You just, you know, put the stick in some diagonal thing and you go that way. Or if you really want to walk straight left or right, then push, you know, the D-pad or something. You know, you can do that. When you get into a battle and you're moving around on the grid, there's no confirmation about movement, and the grid is ridiculous. It is exactly diagonals, right? It's an X on the screen, so you can you have to push up to move up and left, and I might even be wrong about that, because every single time I start a battle, I move in the wrong direction, and there's no way to reverse that. So you move, and then, you know, that's your turn. I have so frequently turned around and moved away from an enemy when I meant to attack them. And I cannot get used to this. The 8 directions don't work anymore. If you go diagonally in battle, it just picks one of the directions and then goes that way. So you have to know how, like, it actually ended up with me tilting the controller so that I could get that X, and then I can actually visualize where I'm trying to go. So just know that this game, the battles in this game exist on a 45-degree angle, and they really could have done something to improve that, including just transferring the field controls to the tactical battle controls. I mean, it would have been easy. But yeah, so that's kind of that thing. But, and you know, when you want to attack an enemy, you just kind of run into it if you want to attack it. You get multiple moves per turn depending on what your level is. And actual levels, despite everything else in this game being all about growth, levels take forever to get. They even seem to have improved that in this game versus other games, because there is a toggle to go with the classic experience and gold system, or the new golden and experience system, which is apparently much more generous. So apparently this game used to take like an hour to get like a single level, but they've kind of fixed that. But anyway, I don't know. It's a quirky game. I quite enjoy it. I'm an RPG enjoyer, and I love to get a new kind of experience, and I don't mind a grind. I like to see little numbers go up. So yeah, this is the game for me in that sense.
Oh, well, it is clocking in at $20 on the Switch. What do you think?
I think $20 is fair, especially considering it's, you know, a little bit older, and it's a sequel to a game that's not even available on the Switch. I think that just definitely pay everything that I said.
Drop
in mind.
It
if all that sounds good, then it's a definite buy it for you. There's not really going to be too much. There's not going to be too much in the game that will surprise you, based, you know, other than what I just said.
The real surprise is that our good friend Chris just dropped by in chat and dropped 1,000 biddies. Chris,
that's so many
biddies for coming by and dropping bits. I owe you a smile, so Here's the smile. Through, if you could see it through the beard.
It's there.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you.
Disappears into the mustache a little bit. We can see.
I can't help it. I'm
happy. Yeah, no, I know. I got one too. Anyways, so that's half the price of a copy of this game right there.
Yeah.
There Anyways, you go. Yeah, I'd say yeah, if you don't mind a slower RPG, and I do mean slower, and you like the kind of quirky element of it, and you know, like I said, light humor, then yeah, this is definitely a buy it. For your, you know, for the JRPG fan who just got off of the Final Fantasy Pixel remasters and is looking for another, you know, innovative, world changing, old school RPG, well, you know, definitely just go for Dragon Quest. but that's okay. It's at least a try it for everybody. So that's my thing.
Nice. And if you are a hardcore collector, I believe Play Asia still has the PS4 physical edition in stock.
Yeah, it's
a bit pricey. I think it's $50, but you know, if you like your physicals, there you go. It used to have a collector edition, but that's long gone. Maybe East Asia Soft will do something physical for the Switch.
Yeah, but also if you're in the market for $20 for an RPG, pick up Chained Echoes. It's still out there.
That's one too.
It's so good.
Anyway, next game, Shattered Heaven, developed by Leonardo Production, published by Leonardo Interactive and Whisper Games, released May 31st on Steam for $14.99. Shattered Heaven is a single-player deck builder card game with RPG elements and an ambitious branching narrative set in a dark fantasy world. The game focuses on a card game and roguelike gameplay fueled in great replay value thanks to procedural dungeons, a deep crafting system. Pernell, what is going on in Shattered Heaven?
So Shattered Heaven is a interesting yet also very depressing game in a world where, how to describe this properly, from what I can gather, because apparently I'm bad with narratives these days, you are tasked with a team of three people going forth and adventuring across dungeons to take out pretty much a series of big bads to appease the divine child, but then ultimately, of the groups, only one of you can actually be the final group to survive, and with the goal ultimately being to gather salvation for your community, because this is a post-apocalyptic-esque world where things aren't great for anybody right now, which probably explains the depressing aspect, because everybody seems to be very angry in this game and very frustrated with everything around them. But if, again, you might be like me in certain cases, and narrative is not your forte so much as, what the hell am I getting out of this for play experience? Because this is a dungeon traveling, deck building, deck brawling game. Well, I will say that they do a good job with that here, though there is a bit of a learning curve to build your way into it, because a large part of what kept me, you know, from getting into it initially was this is one of those games where the deck that you play from has a lot of terminology on the individual cards that you have to get used to reading. So various words where it's like, in order to know what it means, you have to push a specific button to go to your card listing and read through the cards and go, okay, here's the description of what these four things mean that are on this specific card. Okay, I'm going to use this card. And then you like get used to, you chain cards together, whatever. But I digress about that part. I should talk about just the gameplay in this whole in itself, and then you'll understand what I was referring to by that. So the general gameplay loop is that you leave your general home base and you choose one of the game's available dungeons to explore. Once you select that, you and your team of three people will delve into this location. The areas that you go into on each dungeon are randomly generated. But before you get started on them, per se, a few things occur. The game will start with a general mission for that area that you're in. So it might say, find this enemy and defeat him, or access the next floor, or find these keys and exit, get through the final door. So you'll get your general goal. You'll also then be tasked with the potential to add an extra negative effect on the dungeon, with the reasoning for that being that by choosing a specific effect and completing the dungeon with that effect intact, you'll get bonus currency. In this case, the game is referred to as Dark Bones. So it would behoove you to peruse the list and choose what is most doable for you and just take the dangerous aspect of travel in the mind and get your extra money. because you're going to spend the hell out of it. I can promise you that. But then once you've made that established and you get down to the dungeon proper, you will see a series of rooms connected by pathways, and you'll click through them as you go from room to room. As you step into a room, a number of things could occur. Well, not too many things, but a number of things, but within two classes. Either A, a battle will commence, in which case you will go into the main combat structure. Main combat structure being something I'll talk about in a second. Nothing could happen, in which case you just move on to the next room. And then the actual other thing that can happen, the real event, is you might trigger a sequence where you have to make a choice, and the choice could affect your outcome. So battles being the main aspect of the game, I'll talk about that first. When you get into combat, you and your party members will be lined up on the left side, on the right side of the screen, and opponents will be on the left. There is a turn gauge at the top that will show the order of operation, well, who goes and when. And then this is where it gets a little interesting in the complexity aspect of it all. Each character starts with 2 AP unless you do some upgrades, which I'll talk about a little later. And you have used those AP to use cards that are in your hand. Cards can range in what they would require from 4 up to whatever. And choosing what effects you'll use is important. Each card, in addition to its normal effects, has like a jewel associated with, like a ruby, a sapphire, or an emerald. Some cards utilize that to represent like different effects that can be come into play if you use certain types of those cards in combat. And then aside from that, there's also just the typical effects like how much damage this card will do, or this card might allow you to do damage, but also, you know, siphon energy from the opponent. But what makes this particularly intriguing is that each player character has their own unique hero deck, in which case their cards are suited particularly to the type of player. Oh, God damn it. to the particular type of character they are. So, for example, one of the characters, the main character, her main gimmick is something called Swift. Swift is a thing where it comes with a card, and when you play the card, you'll use the card, then you'll discard another card from your hand and draw a new one. And then there's also cards related to that where if you've used a certain number of Swift effects, that card will either be cheaper to play or will be more powerful when you play it. So you're supposed to kind of exploit Swift effects with her. The next character, his big gimmick is he's like the tank. So his whole thing is building his defense up frequently and blocking the other characters and taking the damage in their stead. And as he does that, he gains points in something called Rage, which he can then apply to use special abilities that are specifically used, that specifically use rage as currency. And the last character, probably my favorite of the bunch, is a girl that you would think on appearance is like a cleric, but in reality, she's like more like a necromancer. She's got a weird monster or an entity that possesses her. And depending on what you use a card to do, it has a variety of effects. So at the default, a card will just do basic damage. It can do damage or it can have like a general effect, like a status effect or whatever. But if you manage to pull off something that gives you the ability to inflict thirst on an opponent, it will build up a gauge. And for every notch on that gauge you have, the possessed creature will be behind you on the screen. And so long as that creature is available on the screen, all of your cards have a better ability. They're all better. So you'll find yourself trying to find ways to build up your thirst specifically to use the better effects of other cards in your hand. You'll even be holding on to some being like, well, this could do something, but the real thing is in that thirst ability. Got to hold off on this thing. And you might even use cards where if you really need thirst badly enough, you can just use this card. You'll get thirst, but your armor will take a penalty for it, and you'll be kind of vulnerable to extra attacks. Good time to use the guy that absorbs damage for you, though. That could be challenging if the opponent uses a group attack. Womp womp. So I rambled a fair bit about the general aspects of that, but that doesn't even go on to mention that every combat encounter also comes with its own sub-goal, which you'll want to try to complete because it yields bonus effects or bonus benefits, rather, when you complete the dungeon having fulfilled a number of those conditions. So it might say, for example, defeat one of the opponents before the others, or get the tank Agni or Magni's rage gauge up to like 5 or 6 by the end of the battle, which means you have to build up his rage gauge and not use any of his abilities for the most part. There's a number of things like that occur. So you'll be exploring the dungeon, finding, you know, fighting monsters, trying to fulfill these conditions, avoiding traps, making the right choices in decision-making spots, and just engaging in typical roguelikey dungeon mabobs. So I guess I don't want to call it roguelike because it's not a whole die and rebirth with light benefits. It's specifically roguelike in the sense that each time you come back to the dungeon, the areas are kind of randomly generated. When you do leave a dungeon floor or dungeon environment as a whole, when you're completed the environment, you will get rewards based on how many of those battle conditions you completed, and also just whatever the reward is that the dungeon is going to offer you for completing that run. And then you'll be kicked back to your main base, where you can do the typical elements of upgrading your character. There's a quarters environment, where when you go back to the quarters, you might trigger a character dialogue sequence where everybody gets to know each other in a, want to say heartfelt thing, but again, everybody hates each other for some damn reason. So it's like, everybody's frustrated because they're dealing with some bullshit in this world, and that's just how it is. There's also elements where you can go to like a shop to buy just typical items you can use. Sometimes, for example, an item that might increase your chances of success on avoiding a trap on a trap event. You might find potions, which you can kind of create through crafting to give yourself various effects based on the components you combine to make the potion. You can buy trinkets and accessories, which can be equipped on your characters to give them passive effects, and also just kind of heal yourself sometimes in combat if you want to use that instead of like the cards that heal 2 hit points at a damn time. And then, of course, you can't have a game like this without skill trees. And this game does have a skill tree for each of the main characters. And I don't want to say it's extensive, but there are enough nodes there that you will be building off of it for a good bit. And you might find yourself using various versions of the character builds for various environments and situations. You can save multiple skill tree builds and equip them as needed. You can also reset your skill tree point allocation as needed to try again. So they incentivize you to experiment and come up with a build that's right for you at whatever time with how many skill points you have available to spend at any given time. This game is hard in the sense that it has that weird learning curve. And I don't even want to say it's a knock, because I feel like deep down, this is a normal thing for a lot of games like this. I mean, I play a ton of card games. I know there's always like a various, if you use this thing, then it triggers this, which also can trigger that. But for some reason, it took me a little bit longer to get used to all the text that has abilities that refer to a glossary than it does in a lot of other games. So that is like the sort of buildup to getting acclimated and decent at this game. But I do feel like it's got a cool world to it. I like the idea of what they're trying to accomplish here. And I like the battles, though I'll be thinking be a little slow at times. Once I got past the hurdle of knowing what the hell my abilities were supposed to represent, I found myself using, you know, 2 swift cards to reduce the points of the diamond card that builds off of using swift cards down to 0. So I technically get 3 attacks in a round, despite only having 2 AP. I enjoy, you know, breaking the system in that regard. And I didn't even mention the fact that I did mention earlier about the Magni character having skills that he can use to, like, you know, like build his rage up. He uses rage to use his skills and whatnot. But what I failed to mention is that every character has 3 skills that they can equip that each have their own cooldowns associated with them. You earn more skills as you unlock them in the skill tree, and you can swap them in and out as needed. But I do feel like they add a bit of tactical depth to the game, too, because you're not always limited to just the cards in your hand. You might find yourself in a situation where you're about to see an enemy do a deep attack. You are really wishing you had some shields up, but none of the cards in your hand generate shield. But thankfully for you, this particular character is equipped with a skill that upon using it gives everybody in the party 5 shield. Yeah, the cooldown for it is 4 turns, but you need that shit now. Burn it, burn it, burn it. So you'll do it. And it's kind of nice to have access to these different things that you can apply to make your life a little better. Same goes for different potions you can equip that can be used, and they just have to get refilled when you go to bonfires, hidden in dungeons, or when you leave the dungeon itself. So there's a lot going on with this game as far as like customization goes for your characters. I didn't even get an idea of things like, you know, purging your deck. And the fact that after, oh, I'll say that part now. The reward for every battle is a new card that you can equip for each character. There's 3 cards that will show up, and each character has to choose one of them that they can equip. And unlike the hero decks that I mentioned each character getting, these cards are more general cards, in which case everyone can use the cards. But when you leave the dungeon proper, those cards are purged, and you're back to just your default player cards that you get per hero. That you do unlock more hero cards as well as you play the game, so you will be tooling that deck as needed. With an interesting hook being that you have to equip 20 cards by default, that you'll unlock the ability to do other things and expand upon that. But they force you to use initially 6 of the more garbage cards. So it's like these like 6 basic cards that the all can access, and due to them being weaker than the others, it's actually more of a penalty to make you equip those as opposed to your better cards. But you can slowly build that so that you can use more and more cards that aren't your trash cards and kind of have a better deck that way. Though at least having those trash cards gives you an easy card to swift out when it's time to bring a cool card in. So there it is. So I'll stop rambling now unless you have a question about anything else I didn't mention. But yeah.
Nah, I just want to know if it's worth picking up for $15.
Damn, you didn't even care what I had to say. But
dude, I am so tired and we are going so long tonight.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of fun to be had. But I will say this game is worth $15. It might be a little more tawdry if it was like $30 or something, but I think it's easily worth $15.
Well, it is in early access right now, so it is possible that the price may go up over time. They said they're planning to slightly change the price when it hits a version 1.0. If they decide to change course, they will be sure to let people know any kind of price adjustments that come along. But I guess it's worth jumping in now while it's 15, huh?
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know how it goes. They end up adding more content, which then increases the value of the game in their eyes, so they increase the price. So, I mean, chances are, if they increase the price, just see what they added since the initial build and go from there. But I do think the game is fun and worthy of play. So, there you will.
Cool. Next up is Venba, developed and published by Visai Games, released July 31st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, and PC for $14.99. Venba is a short narrative cooking game where you play as an Indian mom who immigrates to Canada with her family in the 1980s. Players will cook various dishes and restore lost recipes, hold branching conversations, and explore in this story about family, love, loss, and more. Brooke and Aki, both of you played this. Who wants to start?
We'll start us out and then I'll hand it to Aki later. And it's going to be really cool because I'm going to say, and you don't have to take my word for it, because here's Aki, just like I did earlier. So look forward to that. Okay. So,
spoilers. Vimba, I mean,
I'm just going to say it. Yeah. I'm giving away my own content here. Dang it. That was a golden joke. No, it wasn't. Vimba's a beautiful game. This is beautiful. It's a little short for me, not going to lie. I think I finished my playthrough of this in about 3 hours. Which means it probably took Aki or any normal person about 30 minutes. Not just playing, but seriously. I don't normally go buying games that are only going to take me an evening to complete because I'm an escapist. I don't want games to be over, especially if I'm loving it. Tim has ragged me about this in my game hours on some games we share a lot. But I didn't buy this. I'm reviewing it. And I'm actually kind of recently learned, much to my surprise. I guess I thought, you know, people didn't really love short games, but some people really love short games. The person who made me realize this deep down, specifically like short narrative experiences, they want a game they can complete in an evening that's not going to take them forever to get through the story. So as such, you know, I can look at it objectively and in the eyes of my friend and say, honestly, out of all the games that have taken me a couple hours, maybe more, this is probably my fave. This is a gorgeous game about an Indian family from a Tamil family. The art is lit. The music is super good. It's lit, all caps with like a space between L, I, and T in my notes. I was like, damn, I need to listen to more music from India because this honestly slaps. I really enjoyed it. And of course, I fancy myself R.
Yeah.
It's so good. I didn't know you played this too, dude.
No, I didn't play it. I just mean Indian music in general.
Oh, yeah. I don't actually know that much about it. And this game was really like, makes me want to look at more. And it was like a wide breadth of different... It felt like different subgenres within Indian music, you know, like that's not a genre, but like it was really cool. But yeah, so I fancy myself our resident otome and cooking game super dork here on SML. So I'd be remiss if I didn't admit that my second favorite thing about this game is how delicious the food looks and sounds. When you're cooking in this game, there's just all kinds of ASMR goodness, like lighting my brain on fire. The sizzle, the flip, steaming stuff. It's all great. Also, after I played this game, my phone has not stopped showing me ads for different Tamil dishes. Legitimately, Facebook earlier today showed me an ad for some idli batter that some lady is selling in my town. That, like, what do? I just go over there and get the batter. Anyway, I'd never heard of this dish before I played the game, but we all know this is a story-heavy, heavy game. I actually think that's one of the things dictating length here. It's a very specific guided experience. Through a family's journey together, having moved from Tamil to Canada, the land of opportunity, with free healthcare. Taking a long, awkward pause while we all think about that and feel sorry for ourselves here in the U.S. Anyway, if you think that got a little dark and awkward, then don't be playing this game because you will be experiencing some themes surrounding immigration, racism, socioeconomic issues. Nothing goes too deep. In fact, don't listen to me when I say don't play this game because we don't spend a lot of time in the dark places here. It's just very real. Like, it's a real story of a real family. But it's also a very chill environment somehow, too, in a way that's hard to explain. While it sometimes gets emotional, I do find it to be a pretty smooth and easy and ultimately mostly upbeat play, especially where it ends. So don't be scared of it getting too emo, depressing in the way that only indies really can bring us. I'm only going to discuss chapter one just setting-wise so we don't get any real spoilers because of the length, but here's what the game's about. The game opens up and you're playing as Vimba. You're a woman, you're the wife of the couple on screen. And you won't play as her quite the entire time through the game, but in scene one you do. You're waking up, you've been sick for 2 days, your husband is like, how are you feeling? And you get your first dialogue choice. So I don't remember exactly what you say, but you can say, I'm just tired, or you can say, oh, I'm nauseous again. And I feel like I'm gonna have to tap into Aki for more info on this later. Whatever choices you pick, I feel like the dialogue for the most part doesn't change. It's just changing your own choice.
But you are correct.
Cool, because I only did like one playthrough of this one. But yeah, I really like the next choice, even if it doesn't really truly branch, because you're asking your husband, did he eat breakfast? Did he pack his lunch yet or whatever? He's like, nah, I'm not worried about it. And you're like, what the heck, dude? Just go cook something. There's some idli batter in the kitchen. Make some idlis. It's super easy. You just put the thing in the thing. And he's like, nah, I don't think I can figure that out. And you can either be like, fine, whatever. You can be like, nah, fine, I'll just get up and cook. And it's a little passive aggressive and funny because either way, you end up cooking for him. And it's definitely got an intentional bit of humor here with like some traditional gender roles and some domestic humor in there. Like, oh, I'll just do it. And like, oh, no, I'm fine. And like, you even comment on him being like, you're always like, you just can't figure it out. And it's a little bit of a commentary of a man doing like, oh, I don't know how to do the dishes good. And that kind of becoming the routine. But anyway, there you are. Now we're in the kitchen and we're making idlis. If I'm even pronouncing that right, because this game is not voiced. But the recipe book we brought here to Canada with us from our mom has stains. It's got missing pages. You're like, crap, I just told homie anybody can make this. And now I'm blanking out. And now we get to cook for the first time. We have to figure out some stuff. There might be some trial and error going on, but unless you're achievement hunting cold out the gate, you're not going to like experience any bad stuff by making a recipe wrong while you try to get it done. The game will just be like, nope, that's not it, and it'll restart you and give you back your ingredients. Sometimes it's like a bit of a logic puzzle too. There's no time limit. Ingredients are dragged and dropped around the screen by your cursor. Sometimes you can figure out the amounts or order or even like what layer goes where if it's like a layered dish. So soon we're done making the idlis and we present them to our husband. Not only were we sick today, but we also were extra good. We use the spices and garnishes to draw his face on one of the idlis and our face on one of the other ones. He's got a big old mustache. It's pretty funny and cute. And he's like, ah, you did this even though you're not feeling well. I love it when you do this. And you're done. And he walks you to the doctor's office so you can figure out what's going on with your nausea lately. He's not going to walk you back home because he's on his way to work. So you come back from the doctor. And the day passes, we notice as the afternoon progresses, you seem to be in a really good mood. You're brushing your hair, you're putting on some jewelry and some nice clothes, you're making idlis again. He comes home, he said, hey, how'd it go with the doctor today? What did he say? And you're like, hey, sit down, maybe you should eat first. And he's like, yo, what the heck? You're scaring the crap out of me, dude. What did he say? And you're like, dude, why don't you just take a bite of the food and calm down? And then you show him the idlis, and you've drawn y'all's faces on them again. But now, there's a little bitty third face. And you guessed it, like anyone who watches TV or reads books or plays games, we mentioned a woman has nausea, and lo and behold, yep, she was pregnant. It's a happy moment. But for your husband, your boy, I don't remember his name, that's why I keep calling him homie and your boy, obviously. later you're in bed with your husband, with home dude, and he's like, I'm so scared, you know, I'm so happy about the baby, it's a dream come true, we came to Canada for a better life, and we're really only scraping by for you and me, and times are really tough, how are we going to take care of this kid? But you're strangely feeling really optimistic about it, and you got a smile on your face. And this is the beginning of a story of your life as immigrants, your life as parents. You're also going to watch your kid grow up. A lot is going to happen. As told in several chapter episodes through food and cooking, which I believe that is one of the five love languages you hear about. I know it's mine. We all know it's mine. I need to work on my relationship with food. This shit is getting toxic and codependent. Anyway, for a short, simple game, I think this game has a lot going on. But you don't have to take my word for it, because here's Aki.
Very nice.
It's fantastic. I really liked it. It was good. And you can beat it in just a couple hours. It took me about two to beat it. Most of it is, again, you just click through some dialogue that usually doesn't last too long. And then you try to follow a recipe that's, you know, fucked up and you can't read half of. So you have to logic it out. And then once you're done creating the dish, you have a little bit more talking. And then next dish. And you have like six, I think, dishes in total to build throughout the entire game. And it's really more of a slice of life of just getting to know this family kind of throughout the years. Because this starts from, you know, when Vimba is pregnant, all the way to like when the kid is grown up. And she's an older lady at that point. So it just takes little snapshots here and there as they grow up about, you know, just life in Canada for them and how they interact with each other as a familial unit. And it's really, really cute, but there's also some heavier topics that they only touch on because obviously they want it to be a lighthearted game. But yeah, it was really good. The dishes, as stated, look fucking delicious and never made me want food more than when I was playing this game. So congrats to the team for that. I am now really hungry and they owe me a bunch of food.
Word, it looks so good.
God, so much of it looks so good. And yeah, I really enjoyed my time with it. The only thing I was a little sad on was legitimately just it was short. And I was like, I just want more to it because it's so good. I'm just like, I could have used like an 8-10 hour game out of this because it was so laid back, so chill, so easy to get through, and just so pretty. Like, the graphic style is really nice. The character designs are very good. And it hit on some things that, you know, I expect that a lot of people deal with, because it does focus on the kid quite a bit, as well as the mom. Those are the two main focuses. And you get to hear about some of the issues that, you know, a first generation has with the second generation in a country. So, you know, people who move from a country to like the US and then dealing the differences between them being from their homeland and being from their culture and all that stuff with their kids who were born like in the US. You get to see some of that, which I really liked. I thoroughly enjoyed the game.
Cool. Well, it is a $15 game. What do the two of you think of Venba?
Yes.
I would say yes, even though, you know the length going into it. But if you do, I don't think you would be disappointed by this game. I think it's a work of art, and I really don't think it's too emo or heavy or emotional. I wouldn't have played this if I saw things going around on Twitter. Oh, this is a game about loss. And I was like, oh man, I don't want to play Vimba. I got to revenge it for the show. I feel like it's going to be too much of a downer. But I don't feel like it focuses too long on that. I think it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it barely touches on loss. I did cry at it, but it barely touches on it.
I know a friend streamed it, and after the stream was over, I ended up missing it. I was like, how'd the Venba stream go? And she was like, I cried a lot.
If you're from a family that is from another country, this is probably pretty close to home. So be prepared for that.
Cool.
I think they handle all the situations that they bring up pretty well, even though it's only a light touch on it.
Cool. Yeah, some of the topics are heavy, but we don't spend a ton of time on it. It's just like, oh, here's a moment. Oh, man, damn.
So it leaves you hungry in multiple ways.
Yeah. I think so, too. I want to touch on what Aki said before we completely wrap it up. Like, I wish it were longer, and I know I started it out talking about, like, I like longer games, but it almost makes me wonder if this is, like, the beginning for the creators that made that game, and they're going to use these, I don't want to call them engines, but, like, these cooking systems. Like, I feel like we learned a lot about how they worked, and, like, now it's over. I just feel like I wouldn't be surprised if I see another game from them that uses some of that stuff, because I think it's really smart. And if I heard that, like, I was only going to cook 6 dishes in a game, I wouldn't think it would be this cool of a little cooking mini game. So, yeah.
2 Venba, 2 Furious coming next year.
Yes. Amazing.
All right. Next game is Thronefall, developed and published by Grizzly Games, released August 2nd on Steam for $6.99. A minimalist game about building and defending your little kingdom. Pernell, please tell me this is going to be a shorter review for a shorter game.
I promise nothing, but let's see how this plays out nonetheless, Kemosabe.
24 hours later.
So, 4 scored 7 games ago, I played a game called Thronefall. And I have to say that it is a minimalist game, as Joe described, but whereas I originally came into it kind of feeling like, oh, will this be the game where I finally go, this is a bad game. I am not just easily appeased. It turns out, alas, once again, I played a good game. Not saying I want to play a bad one, thank God. But this is a good game. The idea behind it is you are a king building a kingdom. And you are building a kingdom across a variety of different stages because the game is broken up into stages. And what happens is when you go into a level, you have to choose from a variety of things. You have to choose your base weapon, the weapon being what your main character can attack with on his own. And I'll talk about the general functions once we get into the game. You can choose perks, which can be used to bolster your ability to perform using a variety of different mechanics within the level. So you might have one that lets you be able to take more damage, but you move slower as a result, for example, or just like maybe your main base produces more resources. So, and the last thing is the mutator. Mutators are things that will kind of just augment the experience in regards to like just elements of them. Like, for example, you might have one where enemies do more damage, but you get more experience for dealing with them in that instance. So you'll be picking these things, and then once you select it, you'll get, ta-da, dumped into a level. And what does that exactly entail? Well, you are on a stage, and the map is pretty much present. Like, you can see what your access is. You'll be able to see where your home base is, and also where enemies can kind of spawn in from. They can spawn in from multiple directions, but depending on the wave, they may spawn in from one or two, or hell, all the location points at one time. So beware. So you might be hearing me talk and go, this is clearly a tower defense game. Enemies spawning in. I have to defend myself. And you'd be right. But the thing that makes this pretty cool as a minimalist game is that they do a lot of the guesswork for you. There's still meaty decisions to be made, however. But I'll get into it flat out. You get money. You start out with money on every level. You take that money and you can build, a castle with it. The castle has a specific place it is allowed to go. You can't just run off into the grass and go, I'm going to put my castle here. No, the game says, no, this is where the castle could go. And you have to put it there. But once you put the castle down, depending on what level the castle is, obviously it's going to be level 1 when you put level 1 down. You're going to see a variety of little nodes pop up on the map. Those nodes are places where you can apply locations or other buildings. And again, the game pretty much tells you what the building can be. For example, one location will say, when you run over to it, it'll say, this can be a guard tower. Another one might say, this is a farm. You can put a farm there, which will allow you to kind of build income for yourself. Houses, build income, barracks, and et cetera, et cetera. And then if you want to and you have the money to do so, you can build the structures there. And once you've done that, you'll reap the benefits of that structure. Sometimes the structure will allow you to upgrade it with more money, which can give you additional perks once you've done said upgrades. Other times, it's kind of just going to do what it's going to do, and you can just leave it the hell alone. Once you've spent all of your money that you have for that particular round, it's time to get down to business by mashing that button that's labeled A and going to the night phase. When night phase comes, the enemies will come in from the directions that I mentioned before. You have an ability to attack enemies when they approach you if you use your attack button, though of course enemies are trying to attack you as well, so be mindful of that. The enemies, depending on which one they just coming in, they have a variety of different behaviors. Some will go right for your structure, some will come right for you, some will go right for your main base, and some are just goddamn crazy. And when they come in, look the hell out, because they're hard to predict. The freaking shielded berserker guys, or I hate those things. They'll just come rushing at you. And your goal is to do as much damage as you can to keep these guys at bay. Now, your basic attack, like I said, it varies based on which weapon you pick, but generally when you use it, you're going to be in harm's way. When you have full health, if you hit the right trigger button, you can dash, which helps you get from point A to point B, or even evade or stay away from enemies while you're fighting. However, once you take your first lick of damage before you can recover your health, you can't run anymore, so be mindful of that. So even though you can fight back with enemies, your main goal will be to try to get up enough fortification that will prevent you from having to get yourself into the sticky wicket yourself. Once you clear the nightfall, you get points based on how well you survived, how much time it took you to survive, and you can begin the process again for wave after wave after wave until the game is done. There are a lot of different structures you can build in the game, such as walls for fortification or barracks where you can use to summon soldiers, which once they're summoned, you can actually kind of run up to them and collect them and drop them in different places. You can make them stay in place to guard zones where you can kind of have them follow behind you and do damage, help their precious king survive the night. There's a variety of different things you can do in the game, and such that despite being minimalist and despite taking a lot of the choice away from you, which I believe in this case is a feature, not a curse, it still gives you enough decision-making that you will find yourself making choices that will determine whether or not you get the coveted ranking points at the end of a level in clear stages. And depending on when you beat a stage, depending on how well you did and also the different perks you unlock are like the different challenges you complete, such as how I mentioned earlier, you beating levels with certain conditions intact. You will earn points, which will slowly unlock more weapons and more perks and more mutators, which you can play and mess with, other aspects of the game. It's kind of nice that the game is designed so that you might play a level, feel like you got a decent score, go further into the game, unlock new perks, which in turn will make you think, well, if I go back to the previous level, I'll be able to actually do better with this perk than I did with the perks I had at the time I originally did it. So it incentivizes you to want to go back and, mess around and do it in different ways. Because again, the score is not only just your ranking on the leaderboard and stuff, but it has also the way you'll get points to unlock, more perks and stuff. It's a pretty satisfying loop. So the game itself is short. The game is rinky-dinky tiny. I think it's also really cheap.
Really cheap.
Yes, and I do feel that this is totally worth that money. Like this, again, I came into it. I was like, Joe, you want to review this game? And I'm like, I'm short on time. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I looked at it, I was like, I don't know. And now I'm like,
and then I was like, I think it works on Steam Deck. And you're like, son of a bitch, I'm in.
Pretty much what it was. Like, goddamn, I'm in. So there you go, guys. Put games on Steam Deck. I went on vacation where I was like, no games. I'm on vacation, which I know doesn't sound normal for most human beings, but I was like, I want to be in the woods. I want to get chased by a bear. I want to have fun. And instead, I was like, I'm going to do all those things, but I'm also going to play Thronefall. And it ended up being a lot of fun. I am glad I got this game. I do recommend it to others, and I hope you like it too. If you're the type of person that wants to try tower defense-y type stuff, but you don't want to deal with item placement and you're concerned about, am I making right choices? Well, this game at least gives you a little help with that. You don't have to struggle so much with, how to place your items. Just know that node could probably have that cool thing. So, yeah, buy it. It's fun.
Cool. And a fun little thing about the game is there's over 3,400 reviews for on Steam, and it's overwhelmingly positive.
How many nice. Reviews?
3,400.
God damn. Yeah. Well, it deserves them, so
overwhelmingly positive. Game. So,
and you said props it's early to Grizzly access
games. I don't believe it is. Yeah, it is early access. I thought it was.
So I'm hoping that means that we'll see more weapons pop up early later on, because right now there's only 3 weapons, and I'm hoping that means that eventually more weapons can be added as they go beyond early access. Because yeah, this game, this is legit. This is a quality.
The full release of Thronefall will feature more playable levels as well as new perks and weapons to unlock and equip. And then quality of life improvements. The price will grow as the game grows. So if you're interested
in
it at $7, grab it now.
Buy it now. It's freaking worth that $7. In which case, why wait and pay more when what they give you for $7 is already good?
Yeah. All right, one last game to discuss quick is Lisa Definitive Edition, developed by Dingaling Productions, published by Serenity Forge, released July 18th. On Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $24.99. Lisa the Painful is $19.99 separately. Lisa the Joyful is $9.99 separately. Lisa the Joyful Definitive Edition is the soul-twisting conclusion to the quirky side-scrolling RPG series Lisa. Brunel, give us your thoughts.
My ding-a-ling wants you to play with a really cool game. And I'm done. That was stupid. But I had to say it once I heard the developer name. I'm sticking with it. So
respect. I think they'll appreciate it.
They so, better.
If they don't, I'll cry. It'll be so painful. Or will it be joyful? I don't know. Because the way this game designs game titles, I thought Lisa the Joyful was going to be more joyful. What a goddamn lie that was. Because, woof, this game's still heavy, but in all the right ways. So I can't say a whole great deal about the general aspects of like narrative or whatever, because it is a direct follow-up to The Painful. And
if you haven't played that, we don't want to spoil anything. So
yeah, and with that said, I'm just going to leave this with the review with this. If you haven't played The Painful, just play The Painful, and then you're going to buy this one. That's just kind of how that works. Because when you finish The Painful, you're going to want more, and this game is more of that. Hard to believe I'm saying that, because The Painful, in its title, is pretty goddamn rough. You're going to finish it and go, what was the game I just played? But you're also going to go, this is very well done. So there you go. So in the context of this game, the main character that you're playing as is a little different, and they play a little differently too, in that this game is actually a fair bit harder than the original game is. Though you still have access to the one item that you can pick up, where if you use it, it puts it in painless mode, but you're not going to do that, are you? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So one difference in particular in this game compared to the other one is that your character doesn't get a party. You are by yourself the entire game, which changes a lot of how the mechanics and the flow will work, because just because you're alone doesn't mean the opponents let up on you. They're still jerks, and there's still plenty of them attacking you at a time, meaning that you're going to be working differently on how you decide to heal and how you decide to like attack enemies. And more so, it might make you think more about using Joy. If you don't remember, Joy is the drug in this universe that the main character and a lot of other people in this world are hooked on, but also overuse of it turns you into a mutant. So if you do use Joy in combat, all your stats get a massive boost, and you are a freaking killing machine. No lie. However, if you don't use Joy over a period of time, you might eventually go into withdrawal status. And when you go into withdrawal status, your stats take a dive. You're kind of a sitting duck. So beware of that. Secondly, all this character's attacks are done a little differently. So there's more of the, I don't want to say Mario RPG timing stuff, but more of the Mario RPG timing stuff. So you'll be timing your button presses to get a second element of attack. I guess another game that could be compared to is Legend of Dragoon. In fact, it's probably a better comparison, because you'll be just as frustrated about the timings of that game as you are the timings in this game.
Legend of Dragoon was fantastic. Fuck off.
I'm not saying the game is bad. Calm down, Aki. Calm down.
That's the only Sony game she likes.
Yeah, I will hear no bad about Legend of the Dragoon. Well, it is
you'll hear this because you'll hear it because you agree with this. I can't fathom you not agreeing with this statement. If you
finished every single edition in that entire game,
not knocking that. I'm saying if you do one of those combo attacks and you miss one of the time button presses, you can't tell me, you're like, oh, that was fun, I'm glad I fucked that up. No, you're going to go, damn, I missed the timed button press, I'm not doing as much damage as I want. If you say the opposite of that, you are lying. So,
I maxed them all out, though, so, you know.
Why would you not max them out? That's part of the fun.
So anyway, Lisa.
So when you make a mistake in this game, though, it is fairly detrimental because much of your damage output is going to come from those time button presses. And since you're a party of one, every attack counts. So you are going to be leaning hard on that miss. Another aspect of this game that's pretty interesting is the fact that you have a sort of stealthing element that takes place at times in the game. You can kind of insta-kill certain enemies. If you can kind of pounce on top of them, you'll murder them instantly, or at least do like decent damage. But in addition to the stealthing aspect of that, is that you also can wear a mask, and depending on where you choose to wear a mask will determine different things. Like if you do wear a mask, if you don't wear a mask in certain places, people will attack you on sight. And those contradict that sometimes that can lead to very bad consequences from that moment and for later in the game too. So sometimes you just need to wear a mask when you're walking around town, just saying, or walking around anywhere. But aside from that, it is pretty much Lisa, but more of Lisa. And I mean that in a good way and also a way. So just know going in, but you should know going in at this point, because again, you're on the freaking third game in the franchise, of which we've only got two on this combined package. I wonder if they're going to give us the first one. I learned about there being a first one while reading up more on Lisa, but I digress. It's more of that, so you know what you're getting into in that context, but this game is good. I do like it. I don't know where I place it in the lexicon of, you know, top games, but I do have a friend who tried to claim it was like his, well, I don't want to say tried to claim because I can't, I mean, his experience, but he says that this is pretty much his favorite RPG in the last like 15 years or so. I'm not sure if I hit it with that note right now, but I can say that it hits some interesting notes emotionally and from a experience in general that makes me think he might be onto it being top tier at least. So if I'm feeling that just from where I'm at, I would at least think that you might find yourself enjoying it. But again, just know this is a combo review, meaning you should buy them both. Don't buy this one and not the one I talked about a week or two ago.
Yeah.
You need to buy them both. And going in, know that despite the fact that I'm saying the game is enjoyable, that comes at a but. It's enjoyable, but you will find yourself making some choices where you're going to go, are you fucking kidding me? I have to make that decision? My guy just got kidnapped and murdered. He's out of my party now. I just leveled him up, but you know, he's dead. Yeah, that kind of stuff happens. It's going to happen. Unless you're like me and you're very frugal and you try to make decisions that will limit that as much as possible. But guess what? Bad things still happen. You can't avoid them. There's no way to. So just prepare yourself, but also have fun.
Yeah, have fun with this happy game.
Kids.
Lisa.
Also, I found it hilarious. Also, lastly, I wanted to say, I'm sorry, I forgot about it. I thought it was funny that going into the game, I was going to start the review by saying, Lisa the Joyful is a much more lighthearted romp. But I think it's just because of the drug, because Joyful has no bearing on the joy elements involved that are invoked from playing this game. Not at all.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Lisa the Painful is $20. Lisa the Joyful is $10. Getting them together is $25. What do you think of the pricing?
So basically, Lisa is $25. That's the answer. Bye.
All right. Guess we're done.
That's
all.
That is it for this episode. We made it through. Thanks to all of y'alls for being here and hanging out through the whole episode.
Yeah.
The whole party's here the whole time. I love it.
We did it. Before we end the recording, are we still recording?
Yes.
I have to ask Chris, did you write your notes out in advance for this episode?
No, I never write notes.
Really? Because you had, okay, your transitions were really good. You were like, MP, and speaking of MP, and then you had like a joke that led into the next part, and you're like, and speaking of being in the weeds, if you're going to do out of the weeds, I was so sure, I was like, oh man, this guy brought some material, I better Brush up. Anyway, I just wanted to call that out. That was really cool. We had some great reviews tonight.
That's just kind of the way I ramble.
So. That was really good.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I really enjoy your review, too. It was like...
Thank you.
There's always a... I think there's always a moment in a Brooke review where it feels like a mic drop followed by, you know, a school auditorium breaking out in applause.
That's awesome. So, in my dream. I will say that, too. But you see it that way.
No, Brunel, do you write your stuff?
I'm surprised you'd ask that because I can't imagine what I talk about, how I talk sounds like I write anything now.
No, I mean, same thing. It sounds like you really, you know, at least have like an outline maybe in your head or something.
No, it's like I'm pretty much that guy. If you've ever like watched a police procedural drama where they have the board with the red lines tied to a bunch of random crap on it, including where they get their favorite disco fries, that's pretty much how I do my reviews. But it's all in my head. And it's also why you might see me go jump from here across the freaking meadow to this other point, because I'm like, oh, by the way, I just realized because I got to that point that relates to this point.
But and like I do that even when I write the notes, I'm doing that. So I want to be at your level, dude.
Oh, well, I was going to say the same thing. I would have. I'm like, I'm hearing your stuff makes me think I need to start prepping and writing them out too.
Oh man, are we anime rivals now? Uh-huh. Are we going to become better? Are. Oh my god!
I will take you out.
Fennel Sensei with the wind.
Can I turn into the moon?
Yeah.
Oh, are we talking the Soul Eater moon?
The what?
You said, can I turn into the moon? I'm like the Soul Eater moon.
No. No, it's a reference to an anime where that's a plot point.
Ooh. See, now you got to tell me about it offline.
A character turns into the moon.
I thought we were talking about Sailor Moon, so I don't know.
That's okay. I mean, that means it was a good general anime reference, is that we all thought of three different anime that are like popular.
That all involved turning into the moon.
Right.
Sweet moonage. But yeah, honestly, I do feel that's one thing I'd like about this is like, I think, well, maybe not Chris, but I feel like all three of us find ourselves thinking that our reviews are rough or something. But in reality, the other people think the reviews are good, which in turn means, no, all of our reviews are good. We just need to be more confident in our own damn work.
Maybe.
Joe's over here. Can review video games.
Joe's over here barfing. He's like, I want to go to bed. They're making this after school special. Like, this is a good ep, though.
I'm just sitting
this
here.
Is the,
y'all kids are having fun.
This is the equivalent to an SML field trip that's meant to bond.
Yeah, he hasn't kicked you guys off the lawn yet. So
that's true.
Fine.
Field trip.
I will also mention
the glue factory. That's the title episode, by the way.
I will also mention what a delight it is when I don't, like, when I tag team something with Aki, unless we are literally playing it together, which happened the first time. I never know what Aki's, like, take is going to be. So I was so happy when you were like, oh, I love Imba. Like, when I was down, I was like, whew, okay, because I didn't even know. So I love that. I love getting that review, even when we're tag teaming something. That was fun. I feel like you filled in all my notes and the stuff I missed really well.
Well, I got to say, if she didn't like moving out and you guys played it for hours, that would have been the biggest, like, betrayal.
Maybe like an hour.
I mean,
it's not like an hour and a half.
Let me put it this way. I put like 8 or 9 hours into, what was it? Exo Primal. I fucking hate that game. I hate that game. It is terrible.
But that's a little different, though, in that you're like, I'm playing this because I know I got to review it, but yeah, I'm going to rag on it because it's not a good game. This, you're playing it with an actual person who can hear your voice. They can hear your reactions to things happening in the game. So if you didn't like moving out, too.
I've done it before.
you would be like lying the whole time. Like, this is so much fun, Brooke. I'm glad this game is out and we're playing it. What a good game this is. And review time. Game fucking suck.
Yeah, well, there's a reason why she doesn't know what my opinions are until I do them, because I don't talk about what I feel about it when I'm playing.
Moving out, I felt like maybe you'd like moving out, but I had no idea for Vimba. I really was wondering. I would love if we all jump on a game of some sort sometime, even if it's just once. I think it'd be a cool experience to get us all on there.
Don't tempt jokes. I'm sure he's got a couple, or he'll find them. I know he would. Like, by the way, I have this game where everybody's on the moon baking crumpets.
Oh,
speaking of the moon, we are going to wrap up the show.
All right.
So, anyone have any final? No. I'm not going to ask for final words.
We're cut off.
Because they'll last 20 fucking minutes. So, good night, everyone. Oh, God damn it. No. I said good night. Good night.
Goo Factory.
God damn it.